Hello, everybody. Been a long time since I've seen you. This is Paul Boyer. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine, episode 186 for Monday, February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. I've got a lot to talk about, especially the year-end 2011 portfolio investing results, the lazy portfolios, and we'll declare the winner for 2011. We'll look at how it's done for more years than that. We will have a spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel. I'll have a great tool for listening to podcasts for you, and more! Yes, the winner in 2011, the lazy portfolio, by a long shot, was... to the MadMoneyMachine.com website for the past month or so, you've already seen the results of the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown for the year 2011. We track a lot of professional lazy portfolios, and we see how they do, not only in total returns, but also in volatility. The chart I have out there just shows the monthly returns, however, and the winner for 2011 is... Harry Brown, permanent portfolio of ETFs. It gained, according to my calculations, 12.2%. The Paul Boyer permanent portfolio, 9.1%. And the non-permanent portfolio winner was the Scott Burns couch potato portfolio, up 7.3%. We'll dig into these a little bit more and see exactly why some of these funds did what they did. The losers were the Dilbert World's Simplest, down 8.8%, the MMM Do-It-Yourself Funds, down 6.7%, and the Single Fund Vanguard Windsor, down 3.9%. So, the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio wins again. Let me look and see how it did in 2010, by the way. 2010, Harry Brown... As far as I can tell, looking at my chart, it went up 14.5% in 2010. Wow, that's two good years in a row. Let me look at the returns since 2009. Bring up the table. Okay, since the end of 2009, so in other words, we're including 2010 and 2011, 2 years combined returns, Harry Brown permanent portfolio up 27.6%. In those magical 2 years. The Paul Boyer permanent portfolio up 25%, and the permanent portfolio fund was up 21.4%. So, what is this magical Harry Brown permanent portfolio of ETFs? You invest for all economic situations here, and it's very simple. It's the simplest way you can invest, basically, instead of putting it all in one fund, which I'll talk about later. You put a quarter of your money into a index stock fund. And the one that we choose for Harry Brown is VTI, which is the U.S. Total Stock Market Index. The one we choose for... we also put a quarter of your money into bond, long-term government bonds, so 20 years or more maturity, 20 to 30 years maturity. And instead of just buying the bonds there for the Harry Brown permanent portfolio, we use ticker symbol TLT for the long-term bond. You put a quarter of your money into gold. You can either go out and buy Gold Eagle coins, or you can put your money into something like IAU is the ticker symbol for the gold fund. And then the last quarter of your money you put into cash. And that could be a money market fund But just for fun, we put it into SHY, the short-term treasury fund, which gives you a little bit of a dividend every month. So that is why this portfolio is so simple, is because you divide it up into four things. According to the way we calculate things here, you rebalance it annually back to 25%. And what a stellar return it has had. Now, the Simba spreadsheet came out a couple weeks ago, and he has updated it, including the year 2011 returns. He also puts gold in there now. And if you go and enter the starting year of 1985, the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio since 1985 has a compound annual growth rate, compound average growth rate of 8.1%, and it has a standard deviation of very low 5.82%. If you look at it on a chart with the return on the left axis and the standard deviation on the X axis, the bottom axis, it shows that it's the least risky of all the portfolios tracked in Simba's spreadsheet. It also has the least amount of return, but which is okay, because if you put the start year of 2007 and go to the end of 2011, you'll see something very different. You'll see all of the other funds had worse returns than the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio. And so it's that stability that makes the portfolio so good. Well, what if you don't know how to invest in a stock market fund and buy bonds and buy gold or a gold fund or even put it in cash? What is the easiest way to go? Well, up till last week, the easiest way to go was just buy the what's called the Permanent Portfolio Fund. PRPFX is the ticker symbol for that. Now, strangely and unfortunately, last year, the Permanent Portfolio Fund didn't live up to its good reputation. It gained only 2.5%. And I suppose it is because it invests a little differently than the pure Harry Brown portfolio. It invests some in silver, some in growth stocks, some in Swiss francs and things. And so the way that it was caught last year just didn't live up to the pure Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio return of 12%. But this year, that fund is up, as of last Friday, 5.4% for the year, whereas the pure Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio is only up 3.7%. So PRPFX is a little more volatile than the pure Harry Brown, but it's easy. It's easy to invest. If you have $1,000, maybe a couple thousand dollars, $2,500 maybe is the minimum, you can send it to them and own some shares in that fund. Well, that was good. All up until last week, there is a new kid in town. And the new kid in town is an exchange-traded fund, an ETF, ticker symbol PERM. And this is the Global X Permanent Portfolio. They call it the Permanent ETF, PERM. They say it's all seasons allocation. They, in their fund profile on their website, they say that the average investor may not be properly diversified. This lack of diversification may lead to underperformance, particularly when the market environment changes rapidly. In order to be diversified in different economic climates, which is increasing growth or decreasing growth, increasing inflation or decreasing inflation, it's important to consider asset classes that perform differently in each type of environment. The Global X Permanent ETF, ticker symbol PERM, provides access to this diversification in a single ETF, giving investors a simple, transparent, and cost-efficient method for diversification. And you see a chart there, 25% stocks, 25% gold and silver, 25% short-term government bonds, and 25% long-term government bonds. Some other articles and things about this. I've seen the breakout of how exactly they invest in gold, and I believe they actually invest in another ETF, SGOL, which I believe is the Swiss Gold Fund. And they do buy the long-term bonds, not the TLT. They actually go out and buy the 30-year bonds and the short-term bonds. And they do have a mix of stocks, not just the total stock market in the U.S. They do add in a small percentage of international stocks, some foreign resource stocks, some real estate investment trust stocks, and so forth. So they try to add a little risk in the stock funds. But it's worth looking at. It's been out for a week. I would give it some time to mature. If you got a little play money, might be worth sticking a little bit into perm and see how well the Harry Brown philosophy does for you. Well, we took a vacation last week. We went to Park City, Utah, and did some skiing. Skied at Park City a couple times. Skied at a place called Solitude once. I skied at Alta once. And we went to Deer Valley and had a really good time out there. When we talked to the locals, they said, "Oh, I'm so sorry that the weather is so bad for you." I guess out in the Utah area, they haven't had as much snow as they're used to. I think they're used to something like 300 to 500 inches of snow in a winter. And so far they've had between 50 and 60 inches of snow. But hey, to me, I skied down the hill on something white. Plenty of snow for me, especially if you're used to East Coast snow. It was just fine. I read a posting out on, I believe it was Gyroscopic Investing. This has been a while back, a couple months ago. A member out there named Doodle had this to say about the Harry Brown permanent portfolio. He says, after spending some holiday time reading through a website called pragcap.com and watching a variety of videos on YouTube by the site creator, I think I've finally been born again to the permanent portfolio. If we equate the money and banking system, economy, to a nuclear power plant, the analogy I would draw is that the collective people in charge of this system, politicians all the way to members of the Federal Reserve, well, they're the equivalent of Homer Simpson in the control room randomly pulling levers and pressing buttons with little idea as to the outcome of their actions. He says, because our economic system is being driven by a collective madman, whose flailing actions in the control room have the ability to wrench the economy in and out of different economic states, and because his flailing actions are entirely unpredictable, the permanent portfolio is the only investment strategy that protects you no matter what random button the incompetent plant operator pushes next. The future is unknowable for many reasons, but the fact that the basics of our money and banking system are so poorly understood by many of those who are in charge of running it, coupled with the political shenanigans, has caused me to reach the conclusion, through much stress, strain, and effort, that intelligently allocating my assets outside of the permanent portfolio, without entering into the world of speculation, is completely and utterly impossible. Well, thank you, Doodle, for that confidence in the permanent portfolio. Let's pull something out of the Madman Machine tool crib. This is a tool I've been using for probably over a year, maybe 2-3 years. I don't know. But I haven't mentioned it yet. It's not a financial tool unless you consider listening to financial podcasts helpful. This tool is an app for the iPhone, and it is called Podcaster. And what Podcaster does is it downloads podcasts for you straight to the iPhone. So instead of having to go through iTunes on your computer and then sync your iPhone to your computer or through iCloud to get at those podcasts, Podcaster lets you link directly to those shows. So Where, when I went to Park City, for example, last week, I didn't even take my computer with me. I just took my iPhone and my iPad. And a podcaster allowed me, through the hotel Wi-Fi, to directly download the shows that I like to listen to. And so you bring up Podcaster, you type in the address for the show. It also has a directory listing that helps you search for show names and so forth. And you you open it up, and it automatically goes out each time and synchronizes and finds the newest show. You can set settings in there to say how many shows to keep, and you listen to it. Now, one of the neat features is it has a 30-second skip, so you can swipe across from left to right, and that will skip 30 seconds of the show that you're listening to. So if you happen to be listening to a radio show that has a 3-minute commercial break, you swipe 6 times when it hits that break, and you're off to the next part of the show, which is a fantastic feature. I highly recommend Podcaster. I don't know if it costs any money or not, but like other tools I've given you so far, it's amazing. Let's play a round now of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 136 is Ron Paul. The Wall Street Journal has been featuring articles about Ron Paul's investments. I guess Congress people have to report their investment holdings each year in some broad range. And the Wall Street Journal and Jason Zweig have talked about how wacky Ron Paul's investment strategy is and what he invests in. Well, so I did a little investigating this morning myself into Ron Paul's investments. And yes, they are a little bit troubling to a Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio devotee. He invests 65% of his net worth, at least as it's reported, 65% of his investments are in gold, silver, and other mining stocks, 40% of which, 40% of it is comprised of Barrick, Newmont Mining, and Goldcorp. And then he has got small percentages in a lot of other mining companies. I just wonder, I suspect that his financial advisor is Peter Schiff with Euro Pacific Capital, who recommends investing in gold mining and gold. Now, Ron Paul's investments don't indicate any investments in gold coins or gold bars, but 65% in mining stocks is very risky. The remaining percentage of his investments are in real estate investment trust, partnerships type thing, real estate itself, and then cash. So I went back and plotted his performance. Returns versus reward. Now, since 2007, let me bring it up. Since 2007, the way I calculated, his compound annual growth rate is about 7.5%, with a standard deviation of 24%. So compare that to the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio in the same time period. Harry Brown had a gain of 8.5%, a little over 8.5%, with a standard deviation of just 7.2%. So a little bit better gain for Harry Brown, and a whole lot less standard deviation for Harry Brown. So Ron Paul, you gave a sort of a eulogy in Congress when Harry Brown passed away. I recommend you look into the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio. Put some of your money into total stock market, some into long-term bonds, and a quarter in pure physical
gold.
Well, congratulations, Ron Paul. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine Show 186. Well, I'm sure a lot of folks are troubled with the idea of investing now in a Harry Brown permanent portfolio because bonds, you know, bond rates are at near all-time lows. In fact, I don't know if they've been lower ever. Mortgage rates are the lowest on recorded history. Long-term bond rates, government bonds, paying about 3% now. Is there any possible room for gain in long-term bonds? In other words, for the bond to be more valuable, interest rates have to keep going down. And the answer to the question is, yes, of course there's room for bonds to improve. Bonds could go down to 2.5% for the long term. They could go down to 2%. What if a government bond paid 0.1%? Is there room for gain? Why, yes. It could go down to 0.05%. There's no limit to how low a bond can actually go, theoretically at least. Now, there is a practical limit based on the fact that money is denominated in dollars and cents. But there is a long way to go before bonds can never go down, go up again in value or go down again in interest rate. Now, I'm not recommending that you put all your money in bonds, but if you want to be invested in a Harry Brown permanent portfolio, you need to put a quarter, 25% of your assets in long-term bonds. Let's take a quick little peek into how each of the components of the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio Fund did last year. The four components. First, stocks. The Vanguard Total Stock Market ETF, VTI, it only gained 0.9%, just less than 1% the stock market as a whole did last year. So for those lazy portfolios that are stock market heavy, that's kind of stinky. Now, contrast that with the long-term bond fund, TLT. Up 35.5% in 1 year last year. That is just ridiculously crazy, especially when early last year, Bond King Bill Gross said, now is the time to get out of government bonds. If you're in government bonds, you're a fool. And boy, was he ever wrong. 35.5%, that includes dividends. Even the cash component did better than stocks. Isn't that strange? 1 to 3 year treasury bonds, ticker symbol SHY, gained 1.6% last year. And finally, rounding out the permanent portfolio, the gold fund, IAU, went up 11%. And I think that marks 10 straight years that gold has a positive annual return. Well, the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio differs from the Harry Brown only in that it invests in riskier stocks, assuming that during prosperous times that riskier stocks will do better than just the average total stock market. Well, last year was not one of those times. I split stocks among small cap value, ticker symbol VBR, which is down 4.8% last year, and then emerging market stock fund, VWO. Oh my goodness, emerging markets were down 18.2%, not only because emerging markets stunk, but because the dollar did so well against other currencies, which I guess you have to factor in when you invest internationally like that, for a total gain in my portfolio of 9.1%. My personal portfolio had some other crazy things in it, like a little bit of silver and a little bit of that good old Southern Copper Corporation. So my personal portfolio was up under 9%, about 8.7, 8.8%, depending on how you account it. Like I mentioned earlier, the permanent portfolio fund PFX was up 2.5%. The other fund that did well, though, let's take a look, was Scott Burns' Couch Potato Portfolio. And I need to scroll down to get to it. Okay, Scott Burns Couch Potato. It was up 7.3% because it invested 50% in inflation protected bonds, VIPSX. Those were up 13.8%. And the other half is in the total stock market index, VTSMX mutual fund, up 0.8% for a combined 7.3%. So those guys that invested heavily in bonds did well last year. But even then, he didn't invest in long-term bonds. He's just in the inflation-protected securities. Well, you can read more about the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio. Go to gyroscopicinvesting.com and get involved in the forums out there. Keep track of how PERM and PRPFX are doing compared to Harry Brown Pure Portfolio. I understand that Craig and Medium Techs are writing a book about the permanent portfolio. I think that's much needed. I had thought about doing it myself, but I thought, I'm not really an expert in this, so I'm not going to write a book about it. Those guys are expert in it, though, and I look forward to that book. I look forward to giving copies of that book to people that I think need investing help. And I look forward to when that book comes out. I hope that it is one of those evergreen type books that doesn't depend on the season. It's something that can live for years and years and not need a whole lot of editorial changes in it. But I hope they keep a website up for it with annual returns, just like the Harry Brown website kept up a list of annual returns for his portfolio concept. So good luck, guys, with your new book. I hope it gets wide readership. Well, 7 months from now, September 17th, 2012, will mark the 225th anniversary of what? 225th anniversary of the signing of the Constitution of the United States. In 1787, the 13 former colonies of Great Britain were independent states, but their relationship with each other was experiencing some growing pains under the relatively new Articles of Confederation. The Articles was their first organizing agreement since they won their independence and sealed it with the Treaty of Paris in 1783, which was signed by John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, and John Jay. Each of these 13 states had to develop their own government, and their different constitutions attended to the needs of their people. The previous September, 12 delegates from 5 states met to discuss some defects in the Articles of Confederation in order to try to repair commerce between the states. Among the delegates were Virginia's James Madison and Edmund Randolph, and New York's Alexander Hamilton. Their report said, quote, "There are important defects in the system of the federal government." Well, Madison and Hamilton may have already had the idea to create a national government prior to the Annapolis Convention. There were 74 delegates then chosen to attend the federal convention in Philadelphia. 19 of those 74 delegates declined their appointments. Of the remaining 55 who did attend the federal convention in Philadelphia, 13 of those 55 left early without signing the Constitution. Of the remaining 42 who stayed until the end, 3 refused to sign it. That left 39 signers, or 53% of the originally chosen delegates. Well, the new direction the country was to take was anything but unanimous. The Federal Convention was actually supposed to be a convention to modify the Articles of Confederation. But as it turned out, the delegates created a whole new frame of government. On September 17th, 1787, 39 delegates signed the Constitution. Instead of following the Articles of Confederation and requiring that all of the 13 states agree to it in order for it to become law, they only required 9 of the 13 states to ratify it in order to create a new government for those that did ratify it. So the Constitution was sent to the states for ratification and to the Continental Congress, which met in New York. Once people were able to read this new Constitution for themselves, they could reach an opinion on whether they thought it was a good idea or not. and they wrote their opinions in letters to friends, in essays in newspapers, and they gave speeches at ratifying conventions. Some of their letters, essays, and speeches were widely circulated in newspapers at the time. Some essays continued as a series and were printed together as pamphlets, as some of the essays were frequently authored under a pseudonym to hide the identity of the author. In general, those who were in favor of this new constitution took the name for themselves Federalists, although Nationalists might have been a better name for themselves, and they saddled their opponents with the unfortunate negative name of Anti-Federalists, although the Anti-Federalists were actually more Federalist than the Federalists were, if you consider that federalism means a federation of states or a confederation. One of the great writings in favor of the Constitution were the Federalist Papers, written under the pseudonym of Publius by three authors, John Jay, James Madison, and Alexander Hamilton. But there were a number of anti-Federalist papers which may have had even more widespread publication at the time. Names like Brutus, Federal Farmer, Sentinel, and many others had opinions as to why this new constitution might, in the long run, might not be the best framework for a government over all of the states. I will be talking more about this anti-federalist notion in upcoming shows. Until then, this is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money, but the future is unknowable. Invest accordingly. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, go out and read the show notes of this show and others at madmoneymachine.com. You can email me, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. And on Twitter, guess what my Twitter name is? Mad Money Machine.